Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being. To be true to yourself and be honest with others. No need to be politically correct. That's out the window with 2020. Here, we tell the raw, uncensored story, your story. And tell the truth as you see it. Make sure you live your fulfilled life without permission or apologies. So, if you have a juicy, interesting, raw, unapologetic story, and inspiring, please make sure to contact me at zenten21@gmail.com. It is zenten21@gmail.com. Or you can find me on most social media platforms. You know it. The IG, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, OnlyFans. I mean, not really. But yes, OnlyFans. Just kidding. Not.
As you may guessed it, my name is Zen, and welcome to the show.
Today we have a guest. Our guest today is Sarah Hockett. Sarah was born and raised as a Jehovah's Witness. Her mother was or still is one of the last 44,000. And we'll talk about that, what that means later. Sarah was a very zealous and she took being Jehovah's Witness very seriously. She was a Jehovah's Witness poster child. And so I'm very excited to have Sarah on the call today, because I was also a zealous Jehovah's Witness. So welcome to the show, Sarah. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Definitely. So tell us about who you are and what brings you joy.
Well, I am a 53-year-old mother of two adult sons, and they are the most amazing part of my life and a big part of why I left the Jehovah's Witness cult. And I find joy in just, I love to interact with people. I am a budding artist, and I just enjoy just people now, you know, without judgment.
Oh, that's awesome. So tell us about your Jehovah's Witness story.
Okay, well, my parents came into the truth back in the 60s. It was like 60, 61. My mom studied, and then my dad came in a year later. And we were raised very strictly. My dad was used as elder before there was even the elder arrangement. I think the elder arrangement came in the early 60s. And he was always an elder up until his death in 2017. My mother was always a pioneer. You know, I was her little pioneer buddy. Very strict. My parents had, my mother is mentally unstable. She had a lot of psychiatric issues that were not resolved or even, addressed. And my father was an alcoholic and struggled with that for many, many years. So it was a very, dysfunctional growing up. But everything that we did, every experience was around the Jehovah's Witness religion. We were never allowed to associate with anybody that wasn't a Jehovah's Witness. Our you know, vacations, so-called vacations, were our convention trips, you know, when we went to the conventions every year, you know, the big district. I was that obnoxious, really poster child. I was so bad that on the, theocratic, you know, the school, the ministry school, I would prepare a talk just in case somebody canceled. And I was like 6, 7 years old. And I'd drag my sisters up there, you know, and I'd get these talks. And I don't think what people get is the conditioning that goes into the children of Jehovah's Witnesses. So conditioned and so rewarded and love bombed when you did those things. You know, it was abnormal. It was an abnormal childhood. Everything focused about reading the Bible and reading. Like, I didn't even get to read regular books. Like, it was always the publications.
Right. And it's very interesting. I spoken to a lot of Jehovah's Witnesses or ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, and you're the only person who has similar things as me. Because I took it seriously. And I grew up being startled and being special need. And I took it even spirit. You know, when you have to make speeches, and I still even wanted to make speeches, and I did do speeches. And of course, probably everyone probably was like, oh my God, this starter kid again. Instead of that 15 minutes, probably took me 20 or so to do anything.
You know, the one funny thing is about, you know, because we were on the school, you know, so young, that you and you probably did too, but in school, like, I excelled in, like, speech and debate and things like that because we were taught at such a young age how to present in front of people. They even had me on a circuit assembly in San Jose in the Fremont Circuit Assembly Hall. At, like, I was probably 7. And I was on a skit, you know how they do on the conventions?
Right.
You know? I was a little kid. It was like in front of 3,000 Jehovah's Witnesses. And, like, for so many months, I traveled with these pioneers, special pioneers. And on this skit, I was their daughter. And the skit was about, which is ridiculous, it was about how the dad is choosing not to to get a better promotion at a job. Because,
you know, I've seen those.
Because, you know,
propaganda.
You know, and all your time and energy is supposed to be dedicated to, you know, free service to the, you know, the Watchtower Society. And so I mean, that's how crazy it was. Like, I would just, like, you know, up until about 4th grade was my first, where I got my first, like, doubt. I was raised in San Jose, and we took a field trip to San Francisco Museum, and I saw dinosaur fossils. And I came home, and I was, like, so excited, and I was telling my parents, and they were like, no, dinosaurs we don't believe in that. You know, the Watchtower Society doesn't teach that. And I was so confused because I saw dinosaur fossils. Like, I saw them at the museum. And I think that was the first time that I really what? You know, like, it made me question. But you're so taught, so brainwashed to you, that this is the truth. This is the truth. And never to question anything that the Watchtower Society grants.
Mm-hmm. Right. Did you start any questioning later on, or how did that go end up for you?
You know, I've been disfellowshipped 3 times and privately reproved 2 times. And I'll fast forward. So my dad was, there are 3 daughters, and he married us all off very early, and he did so as a, because he was an ordained preacher. And he married my sister off at 16, I was 17, for the fear that we weren't going to be virgins on our wedding night. It was very, very, in that religion, it's just a bad, bad thing. And I was married off to a man who was 6 years older than me, and he was abusive, physically, mentally, emotionally. I went through 5 years with him. I tried to commit suicide. I didn't know how to get out of it. They don't let you get out of a marriage. And the only way was to commit adultery. That was the only way I could justify it. I didn't know how to walk away. Because mm-hmm. they don't let you walk away, you know. So I got disfellowship, and at the same time I got disfellowship, my oldest sister was married to a man who f***ed her two girls, and she stayed with him. He never got disfellowship, never got turned into the police, and he admitted to it. They're still together to this day. It's the most sickening relationship, and how they all coped with it, and it just was swept under the carpet because, well, he said, you know, he was sorry. And they committed like a sin instead of a crime, you know. And she quit talking to me for 3 years because of what I had done. But she stayed with this man that
filed. Wow. So yeah. It seems like that's a reoccurring topic when it comes to Jehovah's Witnesses who do these things and then they're not being reported. So are you recently out as of like?
It's when? Been about a year and a half that I finally, like all my life, I've always gone back. I've always thought, oh, I'm a horrible person. I need to go back. And my family has always been like, oh, you need to come back. And, you know, it's that constant, like, they make you feel like your life is horrible if you don't come back. And so I've gone through judicial committees and just horrible experiences, always struggling to come back. Well, the last time I was in the hospital in April of 2020, and I had to have a leg amputated. And I refused blood transfusion, and my hemoglobin went down to a 2. I almost died. And my sons, I never forced the religion on my sons. And my sons were, you know, very upset. You know, their mother was going to die. And all the elders would do was basically tell me, well, you know, you're being faithful. So if you die, you're going to be resurrected in paradise. I mean, that was pretty much, you know, it was like, you know, see you later. You know, you've done the right thing. And after I started the healing process and coming home, I started really questioning their basis for those beliefs. Like, I really started questioning. It wasn't just an acceptance. I really started feeling like, this isn't right. This isn't healthy. You know, they're destroying families. They were so unloving to my sons, like, unconcerned, like, they didn't matter. And it got to the point where they would tell me, and this has consistently been said, and I know, I don't know if others have had this experience, but they would tell me if my sons didn't choose to be Jehovah's Witnesses, that they would die at Armageddon, but I would go to paradise, and out of Jehovah's, you know, kindness, he would wipe the memories of my sons out of my mind so I wouldn't be sad. Like, who says that type of stuff?
Right, I remember, you know, those conversations.
Yeah, like, my sons are the best thing that I've ever done in my life. Why would I want to forget them? You know, it became so insulting to me. Mm-hmm. And when I went through, I had a lot of health problems, and when I went through those things, they never came over and checked on my sons. They never made sure that they were okay. There was no love for my children, you know, at the time he was 25, came to me one day, and I was having a pretty rough day. I was healing from my amputation, and he sat down, and he put his arms around me, and he said, you know, Mom, I want to thank you. And I was like, what for? And he goes, you broke the cycle of abuse, and you never forced us into that religion. And my sons are educated. I always encouraged them to go to college, because that was something that was taken from me. I was not allowed to go to college. My sons are free thinkers. They're, you know, good young men. And the witnesses would always, like, there was one in particular, like, her sons went to Bethel. And, you know, she never could compliment my sons for anything, but it was always about, oh, my sons are at Bethel, and my sons are doing, you know, this in the truth. And it was just sickening. You know, it really got to be sickening.
Right, wow. Well, I'm so glad that basically what ended up happening, that you're no longer in an abusive relationship with the religion. And absolutely, that your sons recognize that too, and then they express that to you. So,
yeah.
So did you end up taking the blood or no?
No, I didn't. But I've since had a few surgeries after that, and I made sure, because I had the advanced directive, you know, that they give you, you know, the elder sign and a witness. And I tore those up, and I made sure I contacted every doctor and hospital that I was with and said, make sure that's not on my file. Like, I want, you know, like, I'm not going to do it. And then, you know, since doing my own research, like, they keep, the Watchtower organization keeps changing their views on it, you know.
That's what I heard, yeah.
Yeah, it's yes and a no, but you can do this, but you can't do that. And yeah, it's silly. It really is. It's silly. And it's sad that people have lost their lives and their loved ones because of that rule or that doctrine that they...
Yeah, because they're making up... Basically, they're making up stupid stuff that is not real. And then they keep changing. If it's going to be fine, if it's going to be the truth, let it be that forever. So the lives that were taken away are not in vain. But if you're going to flip-flop, 1 year is this, and 1 year, okay, we change our minds, then people are going to be like, hey, I lost my children. And
yeah,
and then you change your mind, it could have been alive. Or if you come back on it, yeah, that's too much.
You know, my parents, one of the women that my mom studied with, she became a witness, and she had a baby that needed blood. And my parents, this is probably back in the early 70s, my parents helped kidnap the baby from the hospital, and they got all the way down from the Mexico border. And the baby ended up dying, and a judge came in, and, you know, they ordered that the baby have blood. But by that time, it was too late. The baby died.
What? They go to jail for that?
Yeah.
Wow. That's...
Yeah, it was just... Yeah, and then I was around in 75 when, you know, the end was supposed to come. Now, my parents were more the type, they were like, you know, they didn't jump on the bandwagon. They were like, we're going to wait and see, you know, and, you know, we'll see what happens. And but I witnessed people that, you know, they quit their jobs and charged their credit up and, you know.
Yeah, I saw a documentary about that, and then they got in trouble because you ggot to still live your life.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, I mean, some crazy things. And the other thing that also was, that really affected me as I got older was I always had a career and I always worked, so it exposed me to other people. And I had some friends that were lesbians, and the elders told me I couldn't be friends with them. Like, I couldn't associate with them. And these were women that were very supportive to me while I was going through abusive relationships and just in life in general, very strong, determined, positive women. And, you know, I remember calling them and saying, oh, I can't be your friend. And how horrible. I can't be your friend anymore because, you know, you're a lesbian. Like, what a horribly cruel thing to do, you know, like,
right,
to people. Like, you, how is that love? And just to go back real quick to the judicial committees, because I've had several. I really like the point. There was another apostate, which is such a stupid word, but who was talking about the whole judicial committee, and they do not come to help you. They come to judge you. When you are having a judicial committee, they're not trying to help you come back They're not trying to help you fix your problems, whatever is going on, or they think it's your problem. They're there to judge you. I sat before three older elders each time and was called they ask intimate questions that is nobody's business, you know, and they weren't trying to save me. They were trying to decide what judgment I was going to get, you know. And I have an older sister that would tell me, why do you tell the truth? Why don't you just lie? And I'm like, well, if you think Jehovah is all-knowing, like, doesn't that defeat the whole purpose? I mean,
that's true. That's true.
Yeah, like, what? What? Who? It just confused me. I was like, and I'm not a liar. I never lied. I was like honest always about, you know, because I always felt, well, Jehovah sees what I'm doing, so.
Right.
And now the whole Jehovah thing is, to me, is such a joke. Like, if you believe in the Bible and believe that this God destroys people every time you don't do what he says, like, you know, throughout the Bible, it's constant, you know, people being killed because, you know, they're not worshipers.
Right, right. So tell us about your married life. Did you say you got married twice or?
No, I've been married three times.
Oh, three times.
The first time I was married to another Jehovah's Witness, and he beat me on our wedding night, and he beat me through the 5 years I was married to him. And wow. I would go to the elders, and I would tell them, and they'd come talk to him, and he'd say, oh, I'm sorry, I won't do it again. Do it again. So at 19, I tried to commit suicide, and I was unsuccessful, thankfully. But I was worried the elders were going to disfellowship me for the attempt, you know, for the suicide attempt. Because at that time, they did. That was back in the probably like 87, 88. And they were not, they are better now about psychiatric disabilities and you know, suicide attempts and things like that. But at the time, they came to me at the hospital and said, just don't tell anyone. Don't tell anyone that you tried to commit suicide. And they knew why I had tried, because this man kept abusing me. And then finally, I ended up, the only way I thought I could get out of it was to commit adultery. And so I did, because I felt at that point I was so beaten down. I was so emotionally and just, I just thought that I was a horrible person and that I'll set this man free. You know, like I just took all the blame. I was the definition of an abused woman. So I got disfellowshipped and I was out, and then I ended up marrying my second husband, who was not a Jehovah's Witness. He ended up being, he's the father of my children. He ended up being a drug addict. And so I got out of that relationship, and I started, and I was in the truth, you know, at the time. And I ended up dating a man and becoming, you know, sexually active, and they disfellowshipped me again. So then I came back again. And each time, like, I really thought my life was so, like, it wasn't going to be good if I wasn't in that religion, if I wasn't worshiping, if I wasn't doing all those things. And I'll tell you what, I have never been more at peace and happier in the last couple of years since I've left. And really, really, like, I don't even, like, I used to avoid them when they call or come to the door. Now I'm like, I come to the door, talk to me, because I'll tell you why. And I have no problem. I don't feel bad about it. I don't feel like I just, the damage that was done to me through my whole adult life because of that religion, I'm so over it. So over it.
Wow. So it's good that you're over it now.
Yeah. Yeah, my sisters, they've seen my Facebook page, and it has some ex, you know, JW groups. And I know they're creeping around my page because they like other things, or, you know. And So they are not speaking to me. They won't let my mother call me. They totally, like, you know, cut all, because now I'm sure they're considering me apostate, which is so silly, because the definition of that is just you left your religion. And as you know, the JWs make the apostate like you're the devil itself, you know, and that there's, once you've gone that far, they've labeled you that, like, you can never go back, you know, they will never accept you back.
Oh, that's how it goes?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Once you're an apostate, they're like, you're beyond, you know, you're the Antichrist. Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of like good to, it's kind of like, if someone is a bad, if the narcissist refuses to be in relationship with you, it's good, because then You're not going to be in relationship with a bad person.
Exactly. That's a really good way to define that. And, you know, I've listened to, you know, I've done a lot of listening to ex-Jehovah's Witnesses, and I consider them, like, advocates. Like, they never bash, I've never heard anyone bash the regular JW coming to your door. You know, the regular, you know, JW is really, they really don't know. They're just following.
Yeah, they're victims too, because we were one of them.
Yes, it's the eight men, the governing body, that are controlling the whole organization. And it's just, it's sickening how they encourage young ones to, you know, dedicate their whole lives in free servitude, building, you know, building things for the organization, and, you know, not attaining any of their own goals, whether they're educational or otherwise, you know, and just allowing them to experience life in a positive way without it. Everything is, they don't live for now. They live for when the paradise comes.
Right.
You know, so to me, they're like, when I was so miserable all the time, but then you're like, oh, but in the new order, you know, I'll be perfect, and I'll get to ride a horse or whatever they tell you to fantasize about, you know. And when I became disabled, I'm in a wheelchair now and I can't walk. And they, when I would, like, come to the meetings, oh, it was like, you know, you're put on a pedestal. Oh, look at this poor sister who's disabled, and yet she can make the meetings. She can go out and service. She can pray. Oh, and yet, you know, not any of them ever lifted a finger to take me to the doctors. One time I asked, and they were made all types of excuses. The only time they'd come to see me is to study with me, and, you know, and to count time, really, you know.
Wow. Whatever happens to community and helping each other, and wow. But
exactly.
I knew all of it when I got out, but once I was inside the dumpster or the filth, I didn't see any of it because my nose was in there. But once I was out, I was like, there's no community, there's no really love, it's all a mask, and everyone's in fear that they're next.
You're right.
That's all it is.
It is. And you know, like, I have a little house, and I'm not obviously able to do yard work. Do you think anyone ever came over and asked, hey, can we mow your lawn, do you need help? Like, there's never been that in my, like, I remember one time when I was little, my dad was, his company was on strike, and of course, they're not allowed to strike either. You can't, he was not allowed to take us down either way at his job. So we didn't have, for like 6 weeks, he was off work, and he was an elder though, and they brought food, and, you know, we were taken care of, but that was not common. That was done for the elders. My dad was in the, you know, we were in the elite, the clique, because my dad was an elder and my mom, you know, claimed to be of the anointed, which is another joke. Oh, let me tell you that story real quick. So,
no, tell me details, because that's part of my questions.
Okay. So when I was about 7 or 8, many younger, my dad and my mom, they called a family meeting. And we sit down, my two sisters and myself, and, you know, my mom and dad very solemnly tell us that my mother is of the 144,000. She's of the anointed. And I was traumatized. I was crying because to me that meant when my mom dies, I'm never going to see her again. Because we had been taught we're all going to be in this paradise together, right? So as a little kid, I'm like having this vision of us, my whole family, living in this paradise with lions. You know, they always teach this thing about lions, you know, being able to walk with lions.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so traumatized. Like, I was so sad and so devastated. And yet they made it like, oh, this is like, you know. And then she only would, like, associate with other anointed. Like, they all clicked together. I don't know if you've ever experienced that. But they were, like, it was a special thing. And, you know, every time the memorial came around, she got very solemn and, you know, really played the part that, you know, she was of this anointed. And she's badass crazy.
So how was she at home? Did you know the real mother? How was the real mother?
She was abusive. She was horrible.
Wow.
She abused me with food. She wouldn't let me eat. My other sister, she would have my dad beat her as soon as she walked in the door. They had this board. Like, yeah, they were not, there was something really wrong. They were very wrong. They had other issues besides just the religion, but the religion, like, promoted that. You know, that there was never any, and of course, if we would have said anything, nobody believed this because our dad was an elder and our mom was an anointed, you know?
Right.
And it just was like, I remember one time that I was like 12 or 13, and my mom sat in the kitchen and she was like grilling me that she knew I, because she felt since she was of the anointed, she had special
powers.
Kind of like that. And she just knew I was doing something wrong. And for like an hour, she's grilling me like a Nazi, like, just, you know, like, you're doing something wrong. And I said, all I could think of, this is embarrassing, but all I could think of, I go, I masturbated. Like, that's all I could think I did wrong. And she made my father study with me in the Bible about masturbation. You know how embarrassing? I was 12. You know, my dad was coming and talking to me about, oh, God, I wanted to die. And then every so often, she just, like, grill me, well, are you doing that still? Are you doing that still? Oh, my God, talk about messing a kid up.
Wow. Yeah, so I'm shocked that when you told me she's one of the 44,000, I didn't know women could be one of those, according to...
Yeah, somebody else recently told me the same thing, but yeah, and I knew there was a couple other elderly women that were also that I knew of the anointed. But yeah, I don't know if it kind of got okay because my dad was an elder, maybe, you know? Maybe if she would have been a woman by herself, I don't know. Yeah, I've never heard that because it was normal for my growing up to know of other women who were of the anointed. I know it was rare, like, it wasn't a common thing. And she actually had this older brother that, like, when she was starting to say that, like, he was a big influence in our lives. And they talked a lot, you know, they're really serious discussions about being of the anointed. I just say my mom is emotionally and mentally unstable, and she not that it was all her fault. Her mother was very abusive to her, so I think it's just, you know, a cycle of craziness. But yeah, there's a lot of things that, you know, I don't think people know, like, that we're taught, like, they're taught how to approach people, and it's very manipulative. And when you go to their door, you know, when the witnesses are trying to talk to you, they're trying to recruit you. It's not an interchange of thought.
Right. Wow. So being one of the 44,000, like, do you remember what the process she went through?
Like, I wonder what the process is. Do you remember or do you know?
Yeah, she... So, from what I can remember, like, she did a lot of studying about the anointed, did a lot of research. And I think she had to go to the elders and let them know that she was, that she felt she was of the anointed. And they questioned and talked to her for extensively, from what I can remember, you know. And then it was just accepted. Like, she just started partaking at the memorial. And it was really hard for us girls because once she started doing that, like, people, you know, they wanted to know all about her, you know, and they wanted to know why she thought. And, you know, we were just told, well, you know, it's between her and Jehovah, and she just believes she is, you know. And for a long time, we were really proud about it because, you know, oh, our mom's of the anointed. Or at least I was. I don't know about my sisters. My sisters are 4 and 8 years older than me, so they have different experiences. Mm-hmm. But, it was just kind of, and now as we got older, as I got older, between us girls, we would make jokes about mom being of the anointed. Like, yeah, right, you know, it's crazy.
What? Another funny thing too, because they teach that, if I can remember right, they said, if you lie about it, you'll die right on spot.
Yeah.
If you remember the story of Ananias and Sapphira, like those ones who died. Yeah, they died because they lied. So basically, it's like a fear tactic because it's all a lie anyway. So if you're going to lie about it or think you were right, since such thing does not exist, you're not going to die on the spot.
Right, and now, so my mother has dementia now, but my dad died in 2017, and she'll talk about seeing him in the New Order, and like, you know, one day she's talking like she's going to heaven, the next day she's talking like she's going to be on the earth, and they used to do the other thing they used to say, or she would say, was there was a belief that some of the anointed might make it through Armageddon without dying, and then at some point they would be raised to the heavens. Like, they keep changing what that really means, what the process is, you know. So it was just all very confusing. Do you remember the My Book of Bible Stories?
Yeah, the yellow one.
Yeah. When we got that book, I read it complete from San Francisco to San Jose. I had read the whole book. And recently I was watching another XJW, and she was going over the book, and I was like, that is the most violent, inappropriate book for children. Like, every chapter is about, like, somebody, like, Jezebel. Do you remember the picture of Jezebel falling from the balcony? And the
Jezebel,
dogs?
Yeah.
Yes, you know, if the dogs were licking her up, or the Nephilim that were strangling and raping the women. And, like,
right.
Who thought that was appropriate for children?
Right. Well, as long as it's Bible. As long as Bible is accepted, I guess.
God, it was a horrible book. And the flood, people were hanging onto rocks in the pictures, and yeah.
Well, it's fear tactic to make you do their bidding.
Yeah.
Can you tell us more about your suicide attempts, and where are you now in life, and what have you discovered?
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. I after my first suicide attempt, they diagnosed me with depression, but I ended up being eventually diagnosed with bipolar disorder. And that psychiatric disability, I think, was really more aggravated by that religion because it's so, what is the word? Like, everything you do is so wrong. Everything you think is wrong. If it's not a JW thought, if it's not a JW teaching. And so I would become very depressed when I wasn't an active witness, you know, because I would smoke, and I smoked marijuana before it was legal, you know, and of course I was just, you know, this horrible person. And that's what they really make you feel if you are not following their rules that you are a bad person. And if you are do have a chemical imbalance, it makes it even more so. I had so many suicide attempts, and I actually was in a psychiatric facility for almost 8 months at one point when I was disfellowshipped. And I finally, what kind of broke me out of that whole habit, I haven't had a symptom or a suicide attempt in probably 12 years. And what happened is my children came to me, and they were young men at that point, and they said, do you know that every day coming home from school, we didn't know if we were going to find you dead or alive? Mm. And it, to this day, it makes me want to cry that I did that to my children. And a lot of it was really the cycle of the religion. I'm not saying I don't have a chemical imbalance, but it's definitely exacerbated by that religion. And I find that there are a lot of cases of other young people that have come up in that religion that end up having psychiatric problems because of the conditioning. It's, you are no good ever. Even when you're doing your all, even when you're, you know, you could be a pioneer, you could be dedicating your whole life, and they will still tell you it's not good enough. You're not praying enough. You're not reading the Bible enough. You're not doing service enough. You're not speaking out enough. You're not, it's never good enough. And if you condition people and children to feel like they're never good enough, like, what do you expect? Like, how do you expect people to live their lives in a healthy way if you're always being told you're not good enough? You know, it's very sad. And I wasted a lot of years. I'm 53, and I feel like I've wasted a lot of years dedicating my life to a religion that really didn't care about me or my family. You know, it was just, could you, what could you do more? What could you do more? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, your environment can definitely push you to the edge or inspire you to do better. So being in that environment did not help at all.
No.
With the...
No, and, you know, I remember my first suicide attempt, I woke up and my dad was by my bed. I was in ICU. And he said, I know how you felt. I tried before. I tried too. And I really think my dad struggled because he struggled with alcoholism, and he would go to the elders and tell them, I shouldn't be an elder. I'm having a problem with alcohol. And they would, no, you're doing fine. We'll support you. They never took him off. And he was a good man. I think it would have been interesting if I could have had this conversation I'm having now with him, because he did a lot of research and he really like studied, and it would have been nice to have been able to stand my ground with him and said, you know, seemingly really think, because my dad, there was no, and in that religion, there's no gray. It's black and white. It's you either do it or you don't.
Yeah, me too. Like, I had to learn to have balance with that, because sometimes I wonder, was I born with an extreme personality, or is it because it was conditioned into me, just black and white?
Right.
Yeah. So.
Right. Probably a little bit of both. I mean, obviously, you know, what our personalities are. But my dad and I, like, one time I was disfellowshipped, and I was a single mom, and I had a flat tire. So I asked my dad for help, and he was getting ready to go out in service. So he showed up in his suit and tie, and he's angry with me because I don't know how to change a flat tire. And then he proceeds to, in front of my 3 and 4 year old sons in my front yard, call me a in front of my entire neighborhood. I mean, he was loud, and tell me what a horrible woman I am because I'm not following, you know, the JW rules and worshiping Jehovah. And so he gets done with his spiel, and then he goes to hug me goodbye. And I backed up because I'm not going to hug you after you just tore me down. And then he ranted and raved. He didn't speak to me for a couple of years after that. We didn't talk.
What's your relationship with your dad now?
Well, he passed in 2017. Mm. The interesting part with that is once I was diagnosed with a psychiatric disability, I think he felt like he could blame everything on that. You know what I mean? Like if I was disfellowshipped or I was not following, it was, oh, well, she's having problems with her bipolar. Mm-hmm. Which really wasn't, that's not what was going on. And so I think, and then when I became physically disabled, I think as a parent, it really broke his heart. He was softened. And, you know, he was kind to me. He was good to me. But, and as he aged, he got a little softer, you know. And I've had a lot of individuals tell me through the years that my dad was very kind as an elder to them. He was not the elder that came in and ripped you apart, but it was different with his girls. You know, he expected more of us, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
So
it was an interesting upbringing.
So any wise words to anyone who's gone through similar situation as you have in the home and in the being in the hall?
Yeah. Do your research. Don't be afraid to question. Like, they're so against any questions. And if to me, it's like, if you really have the truth, then you should welcome questions. You know, don't be afraid to find support with other people that you've been told are apostates or ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. And don't be afraid to accept kindness from just other people. Like, don't be so afraid of the world. You know, there's so, everyone outside of that JW religion, they are, you know, terrible people. And I've met the most supportive and kind people that have not been Jehovah's Witnesses, you know, and have been supportive and loving and, you know, and really helped me through. And I have true friends now, because the friends that you have in that religion, they will drop you like a hot potato the minute you're disfellowshipped.
Right.
You know, I had a girl just recently, I mean, the last couple of years, she, you know, claimed to be my best friend, and we did everything, and as soon as I quit going to the meetings, she wouldn't return my phone calls, I wrote her a letter, like, yeah, that's not true friend.
That is so true, because they would tell you, hey, don't make friends outside. It's because they know if you do, you're gonna find out they are actually the false. That's why that's why it's propaganda with words. That's why they call themselves the truth when it's actually not, but they force you to say it is the truth. It wants to talk to a worldly person. And then you're going to find out they're not the truth, and you're going to actually get the support that you need. Because if you do not have any worldly person, friends, once you leave, you're going to be alone and miserable. And they're going to be like, see, you're miserable in the world. Come back to us. Yeah. It's propaganda.
Oh, they love it when you come back. Oh, they're, you know, oh, you're just, yeah, they love bomb you, and you know, you come back to the truth, and they make, yeah, and it's just, it's, and then as soon as you, you know, like, don't, yeah, if you don't, they're not your friends. And, I mean, my mom and dad, like, when I was going through high school, they made me walk home at lunchtime every day, rain, cold, heat, to eat at home. They would not even allow me to eat lunch at school.
Oh, wow.
I would associate with, you know, worldly people.
So, what would you like to see done by the local government when it comes to Jehovah's Witness and child abuse?
Oh, I definitely think that they should, I don't know what the law would do, but they should have to turn people in. That I was by an uncle who was an elder, and I told my parents probably when I was about 14, it happened when I was probably 6. And it, you know, my parents were pretty much like, hush, hush, you know, don't say anything because, you know, you don't know for sure. And I'm like, yeah, I do know for sure, but okay, you know, that's what they do. They sweep it under the carpet. I think it's horrendous. I think, you know, this two-person witness thing, it's not a sin, it's a crime, it's an assault. Is it, we're not talking about seeing somebody have an affair, or I remember my dad being on, they would go and sit outside, like if somebody was, they said, was having an affair, they would sit outside their house and see if the light shut off. And I guess if the light shut off, that meant they were having sex. Like, it was ridiculous. So, but going back to the children thing, like, yeah, that is absolutely, they need to be, it needs to be changed. There needs to be some sort of retribution for those that have been or assaulted. There's stories of sisters, you know, being assaulted by other elders. Like, there's just a lot of things going on that is just too hush hush. Don't tell anybody. It doesn't exist because this is the true religion. Or you get the other. This is what I've heard a lot as well. It's the truth. It's the right. The only true religion. But men are still imperfect. So things do happen. But it's not the religion. It's just imperfection.
Right, covering their asses, of course.
Yep.
So do you think there's a bias when it comes to the way they treat women and men?
Oh, absolutely.
Can you, as a woman, can you tell us about your experience?
I mean, you are allowed to have parts, but you're never allowed to speak. And the whole putting the handkerchief on your head to say a prayer in front of an unbaptized young man or young child, it's just demeaning. And I guess what I went through as far as my first marriage and the whole adultery, you know, they... having a judiciary committee that doesn't even have a woman to speak to another woman. Like, there's no women elders, or, you know, how do they counsel women? They don't, without even another woman, you know what I mean? Like, there's no other woman available or used to help reach another woman. And, you know, when I was talking about being abused, again, I was going to other men, and there was no women to talk to, in authority anyway.
Right.
And everything is deferred, and, you know, you have to be submissive, and it's just a very demeaning culture. And I always feel like that's what I was raised in. Like, I'm half white and half Mexican, but I feel like the culture I was raised in was Jehovah's Witness.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't get raised in what my race was. It was about the religion.
Yeah, I felt the same way too. I was born in Haiti, but raised in the United States, and not until I got out, I became different than a religion. I became American, really. But there are some things which I wanted to ask you. What are some principles that you've learned from being Jehovah's Witness that you still kept? Or even, not even, or honesty, principles or practices?
Being honest, like, that was a big one when we were growing up, was that, you know, if you even lied, you were going to die at Armageddon. I mean, this was crazy. Like, if we took a candy out of the candy dish and lied about it, we were told, you're going to die at Armageddon if you don't tell us the truth. So I think that has always stuck with me. Like, I'm not a liar. Like, I'm super honest, whatever the consequences are. It's not a bad thing, but, you know, if you do it for the right reason, you should be honest because it's just the right thing to do, not because you fear you're going to die at Armageddon. I think because of the preaching work, I'm social. I enjoy interacting with people, and I think because of what I've gone through, I'm so much more sympathetic to, like, when I see other witnesses that have, you know, they're trying to reach out to, they're so sad. Like, you never see anybody really happy in that religion. Not really. You know? So I guess those are things I've taken away as I don't want to be that way, and have made me better in those senses, but not a whole lot. I mean, I really, there's not a lot of good things I can say about that, those experiences and being raised that way. I mean, I don't have really any memories outside of religion stuff, you know, and I think that's kind of sad, you know.
How are you currently living your best life?
You know, I'm so proud of my sons, and they give me such joy, and I love that they're such independent, and I feel like I played a part in that. You know, so it gives me a lot of encouragement. I do volunteer work. I work with other people with disabilities, and I advocate and help them get services. You know, I just try to make their life better if there's something I know that I can help them with. I became an artist, and I'm opening up my own garden decor business, and that's really cool because it gave me a sense of self-esteem because people started liking my work and wanting me to make stuff for them and do things. And that gave me some confidence. I've always worked secular or had a job. So that was one thing that I don't know if it was my parents or the religion, but all my sisters and I, we're good workers. We're good employees. You know, we all have worked. We all have had careers. Best life is accepting people for who they are and interacting with them without judgment or an ulterior motive.
Right.
Because JWs always have an ulterior motive.
That's true.
And it's nice just to talk to people and have friendships without thinking, oh, I can't meet them out for lunch because if anybody sees me, I'm eating with a worldly person. Like, it's just ridiculous. It's just silly. Silly, silly.
That's true. I've noticed that with the ulterior motive kind of a thing, I've also noticed with Jehovah's Witnesses and other people who are religious, I often say, are you really a good person because you're doing good from your heart, or are you doing good because you're afraid to die in Armageddon? So if it right? So if it's because you're afraid to die, then if God knows your heart, are you really good? Is he gonna save you because you're really good?
Yeah.
And
you're right.
And my perception is about my parents, and I think those were my parents because they wore a mask and they were very violent at home because it was also promoted to beat your kid, to beat the shit out of them. That was very violent to me, even when I didn't do anything. Like you unwrap a candy and then you get home, you get beat for it, or you didn't say hi, or you looked at someone a certain way. Everything was violent. So
yeah,
looking at my life growing up, that also promoted me leaving because I was like, how you fake here and you fake there, that's not a true place to be.
You know, I speaking of the kids, when I was when my kids were younger, I was I think in a psych hospital for a little bit, and my parents came by, and I was married to a man who was a paraplegic, and he was not a witness, but he did end up getting baptized, which is funny. But he was drinking a beer, and he was working in the garage, and he was doing piddling around. Anyway, they kidnapped my kids because they felt he was a bad influence. And he went to the house, and he called the police. And the police came, and my parents said, well, look at him. This is, like, look at him because he's in a chair. He can't possibly be a good dad. And they said, he's doing fine. Get the kids. And he, you know, they made them return the kids. And he went home with them. But yeah, like you know, they felt that they, as Jehovah's Witnesses, need to like save my kids. And regardless of, like, man, that marriage did not last, but he's been an excellent stepdad or father to my children. And you know, how dare they, because he was in a wheelchair?
Wow.
Strange stuff.
What's with them kidnapping kids? I don't understand that.
I don't know.
And them getting away with it.
And my kids were scared. Like, they wanted to go home with their dad. You know, It was, and they even have like other Jehovah's Witnesses that were like at the house trying to protect. It was crazy. Just silly stuff. I don't know. I think they get in their mind. I mean, I think they really feel that they are justified because this is what they believe Jehovah wants them to do, or the organization wants them to do.
Right. I follow my guru is Sadhguru, and he says belief is one of the most dangerous things in life. Why? Because people will say, I believe in God, or well, I believe in whatever, and then they will do the craziest shit based on their belief without any proof.
Yeah.
And as we saw in history, how many wars and crusades and women being burned because they were called witches out of religion?
Yeah.
Because people believed what in your craziness.
yeah
unfortunately.
Yeah.
So
it was crazy. And what's sad, I mean, to this day is that it caused a divide within my family. Like, I have a lot of cousins that left years ago, and my sisters, like, even at my dad's funeral, I was not active at the time, and all people could say to me was, oh, if you come back, you'll get to see your dad again. Like, there was no, and I don't know if you've been to weddings or funerals of Jehovah's Witnesses, but you don't get to talk at a funeral. Like, you don't get to say anything about your loved one. It's all about
the religion or Jesus.
Yeah, the hope. And my weddings were the same. My wedding, well, my dad, when he married me, it was like, you get your 5 minutes of vows, but the 45-minute talk about, the marriage bed and God being in your marriage was, ridiculous. It's never about you, It's always about what they're trying to indoctrinate you with.
It's like no really compassion or empathy. But I understand it because I left at the age of 19 and a half, almost like 18 or so, or maybe almost 20 years ago.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, and I do understand, and this is what basically empathy is, because you are, you're able to see someone else's shoes, kind of a thing. You get them.
Right.
Even if you don't agree, but you get it. And so when I'm on those groups and I see a lot of people being mad, I understand why they're mad, but I don't understand it at the same time, because I'm like, you are the same thing. Why are you mad at someone who's doing the same thing you are doing?
It's misplaced energy.
Right. Because if you apply empathy, then you understand. Yeah. Because someone was saying, someone came to their door and he was really rude to them. Like, he threw water at them, and I was just like, that's not cool.
Right.
Because you went door to door too. Like, if someone did that to you, then you would say, see, it's the right, it's the true religion, because I'm being persecuted.
Satan was trying to get me.
Yeah. So now you're doing that. What's your point?
You have experienced, my mother, somebody else brought this up. My mother, because, she thought she was divinely inspired and she had more Holy Spirit than anybody else, right? Because she was at the 144,000. Anyway, when we would go to, garage sales or, the thrift store, they teach you that, demons can attach to objects. And so she would make us so paranoid. Like, if she bought something in the house, if we bought something from somebody, she would, say, oh, no, there's demons in the house, and it's from that piece of whatever you brought home. It was so weird, and if you have, you couldn't watch a horror, I don't like horror movies anyway, but you couldn't watch, horror movies or scary movies, because demons were going to attack you. Like, that was a big thing back in the 70s, I don't know if they do it so much now, but growing up, well, I don't know if it was just because my mother was crazy, but it was a big thing that demons were going to attack you.
Yeah.
Did you have that experience?
I don't remember these kind of details, but
Yeah, you want, yeah.
I was pretty much, I don't know what better word to use, but I was pretty much special need growing up. And so a lot of my years being blacked out because really I was a robot. So
Aww.
I just remember most of my years when I left because that's when my eyes really opened and that's when
Right.
my brain opened.
Right.
So, but I remember some stuff, but not a lot of stuff because I was just going with protocol.
Right. No, yeah, my and yeah, it was strange. It was just so strange. Everything was demonic and, you were gonna get possessed and strange.
What is your takeaway from your experience?
I feel like I wasted a lot of time and energy, and I feel really bad for, like, there was one girl that I actually studied with that became a witness, and I feel bad for that. I've tried to find her to, to like reach out. Like, I just feel it's such a judgmental religion, and it doesn't let you be your true self. Like, really who you are, and really, I mean, if you believe in God or a creator, which you believe in, like, you're so conditioned into what they want you to believe and act like that you miss opportunities in life. You not just secular or financial, I mean just opportunities to grow and to be better humans to each other.
Would you ever join anything else, or where are you now spiritually or mentally when it
No,
comes to?
I would never join a religion. I really don't. I'm kind of going through a process where I really don't know what I believe right now. I try to focus on being a kind, and I know it sounds very simplistic and everybody says it, but just a loving person and accepting and non-judgmental and just trying to follow those guidelines and explore, other ways of thinking. I don't really feel the need to, like, some people really get into, like, do they believe in the Bible? Do they believe in God? I don't know. I don't know if I believe all that anymore. I just want, I've gone through so much physically with my health that I just want to appreciate each moment I have. It's not guaranteed. One mo I literally became disabled overnight. It wasn't a long sickness. It wasn't something I prepared for. It wasn't an accident. And it made me think about the things that I value, and it's my relationships with people. And that religion controls your relationships. It doesn't allow you to free think and enjoy people. And I love hearing what other people think. It's amazing. Like, everyone has. My mom said to me recently, she's like, "Well, at least we all have a choice. Jehovah gives us a choice." I go, "Yeah, but your choice, the choice you're saying he gives us is either you die or you live. Like, that's not really a choice, And, you either serve Jehovah and live or you don't serve Jehovah and you die." And I just don't choose to think in those terms anymore. I think if there was such a loving God, why is it so complicated? Why are there so many questions?
Exactly. That's the number one for me. I've told that to not Jehovah's Witnesses, but I told that to myself, but I told that to I've asked that to Mormons when they talk to me. I'm like, listen, if God didn't want to play games, I'm not wanna play games. Just be direct to me. Like, I'm not playing these games. And they say, well, if you pray God, he will, and if you're sincere wanting an answer, he will tell you. And I'm like, well, I don't have an answer. Oh, that means you weren't sincere. Okay, so be it then. Leave me the F alone. Like, let me live
Yeah,
my
yeah,
life.
yeah, yeah. I just really like to enjoy. Just I really try to be positive and really, get through those moments. I'm thankful for my health I have now. I'm so grateful for my sons that I've been able to kind of come full circle with them, and they're so proud of me, and they're so supportive, and You know, they could have abandoned me because of the religion. You know, the religion did nothing for them. Those people were never kind or considerate to my sons. And I got to the point where I was like, I would rather die at Armageddon with my sons. If that's what's going to happen, then what? You know, why would I turn my back on my sons?
That's awesome, and that's loving. And that's very inspiring for any people in that religion or out, because that shunning thing is devastating, and it makes people commit suicide. It makes people have depression. And the shunning, actually, their tactic is the one that's actually making you live a bad life. It's not because the world is so bad. It's just they push you into depression and anxiety. And then they say, see, look, life is back. No, you're the one who's doing it to me.
Yeah.
Exactly. So
if you're in a constant state of fear.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think it's been a wonderful experience. I really hope that I can be someone that it can be supportive to other people that want to exit. And, you know, some people want to fade. I would really like to know if there's a way to get my, you know, every Jehovah's Witness, they have a file on you. And I would like to write a letter asking for my records, because I would like to see what they wrote on me.
Mm.
And I mentioned a couple groups, and they said that I'd probably have to get an attorney involved. Like, they won't hand those over. And I find that to be really shady. Like, you know, because I've had a lot of judicial committees. And so I'd like to see what they wrote on me. And because every congregation you go to, your file goes to that congregation. They send for it.
Right. Maybe if you write to Bethel or one of those people. There's probably a way if you Google it, or someone probably have done that. Because I know I've talked to Mormons, they do have a procedure like that. And it seems like the procedure is very easy. They don't fight with them.
I wonder if they really would give all the information, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true. You never know.
Yeah. I'm probably doing it just out of curiosity, just to see what they say. I'm not going to get an attorney involved and all that. But I did read that you have to contact the secretary, the elder, whoever whoever the elder is, it's the secretary, and request it from them. So, you know, they set up all these little loopholes, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, thank you so much for having a talk with us today, Sarah. Me. Yeah, definitely. And your story is very inspiring. No story is small, because individual experiences are important. And it is very vital for us to speak out what happened to us, because someone else who may have similar stories will be inspired, and it can help them do whatever they need to do personally.
So, absolutely.
So I'm very grateful for
other people have inspired me, you know, other people that have reached out, and your site, Floyd Evans, like there's Critical Thinkers, there's another couple that does it. Like, there's some really people out there that are really kind and loving that want to help. They do.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Thank you for being with us today. And I'll talk to you later.
All righty. Thank you very much.